Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Colin Diver has never really liked the U.S. News & World Report's ranking system for colleges and universities, but at least he's come to this opinion honestly.
Well, I was dean of the University of Pennsylvania Law School from 1989 to 1999, and in my second year as dean, U.S. News started its regular annual law school rankings.
Colin says he dreaded the rankings dance each year. First off, it was a lot of work. He had to answer hundreds of questions about grades and test scores for incoming applicants, and then about their salaries once they got out. Then he had to do something called a peer review, where he gave his own personal opinion about 190 different law schools.
I had not even heard of many of those law schools. You know, what we were induced to do by the desire to improve our rankings is put ourselves in the top quintile and put our close competitors in the bottom quintile. And I knew everybody else would do that.
Hold it, really? Because I was going to ask, did you ever consider going totally rogue, like ranking Harvard at the bottom of the pack just for fun?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, at first I did that just for fun. But then I noticed that the form that they sent me had a number printed in the lower left-hand corner.
Oh, an identifier.
Yeah, that was the way they would know to disqualify most of my responses. At some point, I just gave up filling that form out altogether.
It sounds like you just had like one problem after another with how the rankings were decided. And I know eventually you left Penn for Reed College, a school that had shunned college rankings entirely. And you've described how freeing that was. But when you spoke to your old colleagues and urged them to ditch the U.S. News rankings, like, join me, be free, what did they say?
They said, unilateral disarmament is suicide.
And literally?
Yeah, no, I mean, that was exactly what at least one college president said to me. The problem, of course, is that U.S. News has built up a franchise, which is very, very influential, very, very powerful. For a long time, it was essentially the only game in town.
Earlier this year, Colin published a whole book about the way he says college rankings are distorting higher ed. But he'd come to accept that he was something of a lone voice in the wilderness here. So you can imagine his surprise when a couple weeks back, he got this news.
Yale Law School and Harvard Law School are both bowing out of the U.S. News & World Report's annual ranking of law schools.
First, now, Yale Law School, then Harvard, were pulling out of U.S. News' ranking game altogether.
The trouble with the U.S. News rankings is that over the last number of years, they've started to create a set of metrics that are fundamentally against the basic commitments of this profession.
You know what surprised me is how quickly other schools jumped in. Like Harvard and Yale were like, we're doing this. And then within 6 days, 2/3 of the top 14 law schools in the country, according to U.S. News & World Report, decided they would no longer participate in the rankings from U.S. News & World Report.
Right. It triggered a parade of virtue. And one of my friends said, I guess having a conscience is contagious.
Do you think this is the end of U.S. News rankings in general?
Well, it could be if this cascade continues.
Today on the show, why some of the country's top law schools decided to pull out of U.S. News's influential ranking system. Our colleges, next. I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around. This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Can you lay out how the idea of ranking universities, colleges, law schools started in the first place? Like, how did U.S. News become what it is today?
Well, the idea actually goes back over a century. There were some ad hoc one-off rankings back in the early 1900s that were a reflection of various desires. For example, a group of graduate schools wanted a ranking of undergraduate schools so that they would know whose students they should admit. And they actually asked the U.S. government, the Bureau of Education, which is the predecessor of the Department of Education, to prepare a ranking of undergraduate schools, which then got leaked, and the schools raised holy hell about it. And President Taft decreed that it would no longer be publicly available.
God, it just shows how much we humans love sorting. Like, we're constantly looking for ways to sort people and things.
Yeah. And off and on throughout the last century, there were ad hoc rankings.
I always kind of wondered if, like, the rankings became as important as they did because elite education was opening up to more people. Like, it used to be that places like Harvard and Yale were kind of like finishing schools for people who went to fancy boarding schools.
Right.
But when they started letting in kids from all over, those kids had to understand the value of the schools they were applying to. Like, in a way, was it well-intentioned?
Yeah, you could say it was. The other thing that happened was that the market for higher education went from a local and regional market to a national and now increasingly international market. It used to be that most of the people who applied to Ivy League schools came from the Northeast. Most of the people who went to Stanford came from California. But as information became more readily available and transportation costs fell, the market for elite schools became national. And arguably, it became more important to have a national source of information so that somebody in California could choose among Ivy League schools or somebody in Massachusetts could choose whether to go to Stanford. And U.S. News stepped into the breach in 1983, initially by simply polling a large group of university presidents and asking them to name the top 10 schools in their field. They then published that. It was popular. A number of schools that were ranked highly by that method used it in their promotional material. My own college, Amherst College, came in number one among the liberal arts colleges that year, and it sent a copy of the U.S. News magazine, back in the day when it was a magazine, to something like 20,000 potential applicants.
Oh, my gosh.
So U.S. News said, gee, this is really working. It's really popular. And besides, we don't have to advertise our services because all these colleges are going to do it for us.
So this is like a symbiotic relationship. It's good for the magazine. It's good for the universities. Everybody's happy initially.
Yeah, but of course, a lot of the schools weren't happy who weren't ranked at the top.
But I'm sure at the beginning, maybe it was, oh, sour grapes.
Sour grapes, yeah. And initially, U.S. News only ranked the top 25 schools.
So it's like the rest of them didn't exist.
Yeah, but at least they could feel as though they weren't being discriminated against, except to the extent that they weren't included in the top 25.
Today, U.S. News ranks 1,500 colleges. That is far too many to rely on word-of-mouth recommendations. So instead, the magazine developed a statistical ranking system, incorporating test scores, grades, and class sizes.
Yeah, and spending and all that stuff. And that, they claimed, made it much more scientific, much more objective. Wasn't just a kind of a beauty contest or an opinion poll.
I get the sense you disagree with that, though.
Well, you know, I don't like the beauty contest part of it either, as I told you. I think that the college presidents and deans don't know nearly enough about the hundreds of schools in their category to be able to confidently rank them.
Statistical ranking does something else, too. It gives the whole project an air of certitude. It makes one magazine's opinion seem like a fact. But the way the magazine acquires the information that it feeds into its statistical model has always been dubious. Universities self-report. And this has led to one controversy after another. Just last year, a former dean at Temple University was convicted of lying about the number of students who took an entrance exam prior to being admitted to Temple's online business school. He got sentenced to 14 months in federal prison for that scheme. This spring, top-ranked Columbia University ended up embroiled in one of these false reporting messes, too. I asked Colin if any of these controversies stuck out to him.
Well, I think the Columbia one does because it involves the most visible, prominent, prestigious school of all the schools that have gotten caught. It also stands out, frankly, because there was an internal whistleblower, namely a professor of statistics in their mathematics department, who, of course, had tenure because he probably would have been fired for doing what he did if he didn't have tenure, and who took the trouble to do research. And he looked at all the internal documents that he could get his hands on and compared the data that Columbia reported in its internal documents to the data that they submitted to U.S. News and found that there were huge discrepancies.
New at 5, Columbia University has dropped to number 18 on the latest best colleges list from U.S. News and World Report. It comes after the Ivy League school admitted that it had submitted inaccurate data in earlier years. Last year, Columbia was ranked second behind Princeton University. U.S. News.
Yeah, I mean, you really don't have to be doing something illegal to game the system. Like my alma mater, University of Pennsylvania, they did something a little sneakier a few years back. They upped the number of people they were admitting early decision to the undergraduate school, and it made their general admissions numbers look more selective, and they just kind of cruised up the rankings. And it was, I think it was kind of seen as smart at the time. Yeah. I don't know. You're a college administrator. You'd know better than me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's correct. There are various kinds of gaming of the rankings. You know, the Temple Business School is at one end of the spectrum. That's outright lying. and I think a lot of people do that, frankly. It's very hard to catch them, but a lot of people must do that. Much more common form of gaming is the example you give, which is you change your practices or your policies so as to improve your score on a ranking measure, even if it isn't something that you would otherwise do. In fact, it may be something that actually undermines your values or your academic quality. And that example of the dramatic increase in the number of students admitted through binding early decision, what that does, of course, is it drives down your acceptance rate because you're only accepting people who have committed to coming. And it drives up your yield rate. But what it also does is it favors rich applicants because poorer applicants, even middle-income applicants, can't afford to commit to a school until they've had a chance to see what other schools will offer them in financial aid.
Part of what I think is interesting about the law schools who've dropped out of the rankings just in the last month is that part of the logic for dropping out involved some of the gaming of the system and how that played out over years. Like, one of the metrics that U.S. News used to judge law schools was employment of graduates. And the problem was that sort of incentivized graduates to go to big firms, and some schools started employing graduates themselves. So it looked like their students were getting jobs when they weren't. U.S. News comes in and says, okay, we're going to fix that. And they sort of tightened up this loophole. But then the law school said, when you do that, then that makes it look like these people we've given fellowships to go be public interest attorneys rather than going to big firms, it looks like they're unemployed. It makes us look worse. And it's this kind of interesting, you know, you can see how the loopholes and trying to fix the loopholes gets problematic after a while.
Yeah, it does. And that's a good example. For years, the law school rankings were based heavily on employment rate of graduates. And as you say, law schools gamed that system by creating phony jobs or short-term, very short-term jobs to hire their unemployed graduates. Well, then the American Bar Association, which is the accrediting agency for the law schools, cracked down on that. And then the law school rankings incorporated the American Bar Association data. But as you say, then schools that try to foster public service careers through fellowships and so forth got penalized for it.
These law schools dropping out all at once, was it coordinated at all? Like, was there a vision behind it?
Well, the antitrust lawyers are already writing articles about whether there's an antitrust violation here.
Really?
Yes. And apparently there might have been if these deans actually got together in a smoke-filled room and said, let's agree amongst ourselves to boycott the U.S. News rankings. I doubt very much that that happened. I'm quite sure that it didn't happen. But they all have the same view of the rankings. They all would love to get out, but they're afraid of doing it on their own. So as soon as one of them, breaks the ice dam, then the rest of them follow.
Some would call that groupthink.
Yeah, well, it's a form of groupthink. I have to say that when I was a college president, we used to talk about the rankings in our professional meetings, and we would almost unanimously say that we didn't like them, that we thought that they were arbitrary, that they thought they were phony. We complained about the fact that we all felt that if we were honest, we were going to suffer by comparison to the dishonest competitors. It's like playing in a rigged game. And so I'm sure the Harvard and Stanford and Columbia and Berkeley and so forth were delighted when Yale took the step it took.
After the break, what Colin would prioritize if he was going to overhaul the whole system.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, listeners, whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance, too. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance. Then they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now, that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The funny thing about law schools leading the charge against the U.S. News rankings, Colin Diver says, is that law students have become particularly reliant on this annual list when they sort their applications. Many even have a nickname for the very best schools. They're T14, or Top 14. Reliably, these are the schools whose students boast the highest scores on the law school admissions test, also known as the LSAT, because that is how U.S. News sorts programs in its statistical model. So I asked Colin, why did all this happen now?
I'd like to say because I just published my book. But the fact is that there have been published criticisms of the law school rankings and the university rankings just about as long as there have been rankings. So I do think that one theory that's been expressed, which is plausible, is that the law schools that are intent on maintaining socioeconomic and racial diversity are anticipating that the Supreme Court in the spring of 2023 is going to declare racial preferences in admission unconstitutional and illegal. When that happens, these schools are going to be concerned about how they can achieve the degree of diversity that they care about. So perhaps the law schools have been feeling as though they will be trapped if they're still subject to the U.S. News ranking formula that privileges high LSAT scores, for example. They will be trapped into essentially admitting lily white classes, and they don't want to do that.
Explain how that works. Like, how is it? How would the rankings influence admissions and interact with affirmative action?
Well, to the extent that your ranking as a law school depends on having an entering class with very high LSAT scores. The sad reality of education in America is that most of the people with high LSAT scores are white and Asian and not black and Hispanic. If you're feeling the pressure to score well on the rankings and to maintain your rankings, then your admission office is going to feel the pressure to put the, let's say, black or Latino applicant with a low LSAT on the wait list rather than admit them.
Now the question is what withdrawing from the U.S. News rankings is going to really mean. Because while law schools can refuse to answer the magazine's questions, it's not like they'll get left off the list entirely. Instead, as they've done in the past, the magazine is likely to plug in its own data. Usually, that'll drop a school down a few rungs on the rankings ladder. So if these rankings are just going to keep chugging on anyway, is there a way to make them better? I get the utility of them. As a consumer, the idea that you can make a simple list of the best colleges, it's almost a relief. And Colin says that's the problem.
Yeah, it promises to simplify what is a complicated decision. And as I've said often, this is, you know, the decision of where to go to college, or for that matter, where to go to graduate school, is one of the most important, consequential, complicated decisions you're going to make in the first half of your life. And it shouldn't be simple. It should be complicated. And you should do your homework. There are several rankings that rank schools by social mobility, which is to say, what percentage of your students come from lower income or lower and middle income groups, what percentage of them actually graduate, and what percentage of them end up making postgraduate incomes that are higher than their family income when they attended college.
Who's like number one on that list?
State colleges like the City University of New York and the California state schools, mostly public schools that have good programs but admit very high percentages of lower income students. And there, you know, there are an outfit called Third Way has recently published a social mobility ranking. It's fascinating to look at it because, you know, the top schools are schools from the City of New York system and the Cal State system. And the Ivy League schools are ranked around 1800th.
That is really interesting. Like I saw this statistic that caught my eye this weekend as I was getting ready to talk to you. It looked at kids from New York City and where they end up in high school and college. It compared kids who go to Horace Mann, a really elite private school, costs tens of thousands of dollars a year. About a third of those kids end up in the Ivy League once they get out. But if you look at Stuyvesant, also a very elite school with comparable test scores and everything, most of those kids are ending up in the SUNY system, the public system. And it made me kind of realize that elite schools are a little bit back where they started as finishing schools for elite kids and super achievers.
I mean, the elite schools want to be elite. Let's face it. And one of the ways they want to be elite is by having very, very high rankings, as long as rankings exist. Another way they want to be elite is to generate gigantic amounts of money, not only by admitting students who will pay the full tuition and charging very high tuitions, but also by admitting students whose parents will make donations to the school, and students who will graduate and go on to very high-paying, rewarding, financially rewarding careers, and then give back to their alma mater. The top schools are spending, most of them, well over $100,000 per student per year on what they're producing. Whew. This is not what they're charging. This is what they're spending.
Wow.
And these schools don't want to give up on that. They just don't. You know, people talk about higher education as an arms race, but the arms race that the U.S. and the Soviet Union engaged in was a race to have more missiles. It wasn't to spend more per missile. But in the higher education, the arms race is not to have more students in your entering class. It's to spend more per student. For example, over the last 20 years, most of the elite schools have doubled the amount they've spent per student. Imagine a world in which they doubled the number of students that they educated instead. But the rankings would punish them for doing that.
You know, when I'm feeling really cynical, I look at what just happened with the U.S. News rankings, with these very privileged universities, law schools pulling out. And I wonder a little bit if those places have basically gotten all the benefit they can out of these rankings and are now walking away.
Well, it doesn't explain the holdouts. For example, the University of Chicago Law School has announced that they're not going to pull out of the rankings. And I think this year they were ranked number three. They have traditionally been ranked around third or fourth in the U.S. News Beauty Contest.
They see number one in their sights.
They see number one on their sights. And I know people at the University of Chicago, and they believe, honestly, they believe that they are the best law school in the country and that they have never been given the credit that they deserve. And I think they feel as though, okay, so Yale and Stanford, which are ranked ahead of us, have now pulled out. Maybe they'll get punished by U.S. News and ta-da, we'll get launched up into number one. I believe the deans who have pulled out, I know several of them, and I believe them, that they actually believe that the rankings undermine their ability to serve the cause of justice and the public good. And God bless them. They're acting on their beliefs, I believe. But they're taking a risk.
Colin Diver, I'm so grateful for your time and for your work and research. Thanks for coming on the show.
Well, it's been my pleasure.
Colin Diver is the author of Breaking Ranks: How the Rankings Industry Rules Higher Education and What to Do About It. He also teaches law and economics at the University of Pennsylvania. And that's our show. If you're a fan of what we're doing here at What Next, the best way to show some support is to join Slate Plus. It's our membership program. It gets you all kinds of great stuff, including all access to Slate.com and ad-free podcasts like this very podcast you're listening to right now. The way to join is to go on over to Slate.com/WhatNextPlus right now. What Next is produced by Elena Schwartz, Carmel Dalshad, and Madeline Ducharme. We are getting a ton of support right now from Anna Phillips, Jared Downing, and Victoria Dominguez. We are led by Alicia Montgomery and Joanne Levine. And I'm Mary Harris. I will be back in this feed bright and early tomorrow. I'll catch you then.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law.
See terms and conditions. 18 plus. I'm Dahlia Lithwick, and I'm host of Amicus, Slate's podcast about the law and the U.S. Supreme Court. We are shifting into high gear, coming at you weekly with the context you need to understand the rapidly changing legal landscape. The many trials of Donald J. Trump, judicial ethics, arguments and opinions at SCOTUS. We are tackling the big legal news with clarity and insight every single week. New Amicus episodes every Saturday, wherever you listen.